You're listening to 1001 Album Club, where each episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums You Must Hear Before You Die. This episode, we'll be talking about PJ Harvey, Dry. In the room, I have Rob.
Hey, I'm all wet.
And on the line, I have Ben.
Hello.
And Kyle.
Rob, what did you just say?
I'm all wet.
That's gross.
Dry is the debut studio album fronted by English singer-songwriter and musician PJ Harvey, released on Two Pure Records on the 30th of March, 1992. The producer was Head, Rob Ellis, PJ Harvey, and the genre is alternative rock, indie rock, and blues rock. I'm going to read from All Music Reviews, Stephen Thomas Erlewine. Polygene Harvey arrives fully formed as a songwriter on PJ Harvey's debut album, Dry, borrowing its primitive attack from post-punk guitar rock and its form from the blues. Dry is a forceful collection of brutally emotional songs, highlighted by Harvey's deft lyricism and startling voice, as well as her trio's muscular sound. Her voice makes each song sound like it was an exposed nerve, but her lyrics aren't quite that simple. Shaded with metaphors and occasional biblical allusions, Dry is essentially an assault on feminine conventions and expectations, and while there are layers of dark humor, they aren't particularly evident since Harvey's singing is shockingly raw. Her vocals are perfectly complemented by the trio's ferocious pounding, which makes even the slow ballads sound like exercises in controlled fury. And that's the key to Dry. The songs, which are often surprisingly catchy, Dress and Sheila Nagig, both have strong hooks, are as muscular and forceful as the band's delivery, making the album a vibrant and fully realized debut. All right, what do we think of PJ Harvey's Dry?
Dude, first listen, fucking rules.
I know.
Same. First listen, not my first PJ Harvey listen.
Not my first either. But
yeah. Same. I know, Rob. We both listened to Stories from the Sea.
That's the one, and that and Rid of Me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Rid of Me. I've listened to both of those records. I had never heard this one before.
Are you embarrassed?
Birch, no. It's great listening to it. You mentioned this being an example of early 90s alternative blues. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. Well, first I wanted to say this is one of those like points in the project where I'm like, oh, just wait until they hear this. This is going to be so great. This
rocked a lot harder than I thought it would.
It fucking rules.
Same place as you, Kyle. Absolutely. I was not expecting to hear just like a raw rock record.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, and I was kind of talking about, you know, early 90s punk blues, alternative blues, whatever you want to say. But there were quite a few bands around this time that were taking on those blues mantras. John Spencer. Yeah, Mudhoney, obviously. And those even the sort of like post-punk. We just talked about like Nick Cave, which has like all these kind of bluesy influences. We just talked about Bone Machine. I mean, there was something mm-hmm. kind of happening in the 90s. And Rob, you had mentioned that it might be Nuggets.
Sons and Daughters of Nuggets.
Yeah. And so I could kind of see that because when I was doing research for this, she mentioned her father had a wonderful vinyl, you know, record catalog, and it had everything from Pink Floyd, it had Howlin' Wolf, it had Rolling Stones, and so she really picked up on a lot of those things that her parents, you know, record collection.
I mean, if she was born in 69, that means her parents were like in the thick of it mm-hmm. with just being English with the radio stations that the Americans were blasting, like they had a they already had the blues like as a yep. as a starting point.
Yeah, she said Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page, Howlin' Wolf, Elmore James, Muddy Waters, Robert Johnson, John Lee Hooker, and those were in. She said that her father would play Captain Beefheart during dinner. So you can imagine that sort of.
That's why I accumulate records. It's for the children.
Yeah.
Yes.
My doing my part.
My crippling addiction for the children.
Yes, for the children.
She was a Pixies fan who played sax in local indie bands. And for a brief moment of rebellion in the 80s, she said she really got into Duran Duran and Spandau Ballet, Soft Cell, things like that. And then she realized that, yeah, I guess that was kind of like a phase that, you know, I was into the more pop genre. She wasn't saying it was bad. It was just that she gravitated back towards what her parents. She wanted to reject what her parents had, you know, kind of shown her with these older, you know, rock records. And she like.
Did we mention that she tried out for Slint? We covered Slint Spiderland pretty recently. PJ Harvey like auditioned for that record by sending in like a little tape.
Wait,
she wanted to be like backup vocals, Ben, on that record.
She auditioned for it's like Across the Ocean.
Slint Spiderland.
Yeah. Yep. The Slint put I forget which one's parents' address like as a like if you want a male Slint, here you go. And yeah, so
they said they were looking for a female vocalist.
Yep.
Yeah, so PJ Harvey, like I mean, this is only
so,
like
so
I
somehow
9 months
she got her hands on a copy of
came out.
Squeeze like in England.
Spiderland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, but oh, okay. Yeah. So I thought the audition was like for the Spiderland.
No.
But
she,
the audition
she heard,
was for,
heard Spiderland and wanted to be in Slint because they were asking for a female vocalist.
Mm.
And then she was like, oh, I guess I'll make my own record.
Yeah. And it rules.
And it fucking rules.
And it's fucking awesome.
I guess I learned this week. I guess she thought this could be her only chance to do it.
Yep.
You know, so she just wanted to leave it all out there on the tape, you know, which is a good approach. It's a good approach if you're going to make a record. Make it like it's the only chance you could have to make a record.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was 22, I guess, 21, 22 when she did this.
Yeah.
It's fucking great.
And
stuff.
It's one of the, I mean, we always like to talk about, you know, sophomore slump and amazing debuts. Amazing debut for me.
Yeah, 100%.
And the fact that she kind of put this band together, it wasn't a well-toured band, the trio. I was amazed because I had always thought that this had like the ingredients of players that had just been playing for, you know, like years or at least like very well known. But it sounds like they when they're recording this, it just, you know, it was kind of happenstance that they were all just like together.
Yeah, they clicked.
Yeah.
Also, I didn't realize that at this point, PJ Harvey was not only her name, but the name of the power trio. Mm-hmm. Like this is an album by the band PJ Harvey featuring PJ Harvey, Steve Vaughn and Rob Ellis.
Yep. Yeah, it said after a brief stint touring Europe with Automatic Delamini, she had quit the band to pursue her own music, planning to pack it in the following year and take up her place studying sculpture at London's St. Martin's College. The PJ Harvey trio were undetermined when their first gig proprietor offered them money to stop playing because everyone was leaving. They took the cash and split. Off the back of that, they recorded Dress. And then from there, Two Pure gave her 2,000, then 2,000 pounds, which would have been $5,000 US, to make the album. And she went to the Ice House in nearby Yeovil to record with her core band, bassist Steve Vaughn and drummer Robert Ellis. So sounds like it just happened. And I'm so happy.
I'd love to hear it.
The antagonist from the Pulp song, Common People, also studied sculpture at St. Martin's College.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Nice.
But,
nice
but she came from Greece.
You're right, yeah.
That's how I caught her eye.
Man, her singing on this is so good. Also, I just want to mention, since Kyle, what'd you think of the bass? What'd you think of that bass, since you're a bass player?
It's very bassy.
Yeah.
It's perfunctory, you know?
Yeah. Like,
Where's the bass? Here it is. Meow, meow, meow. It's fine, you know. Lacks a little, it lacks character, but it's
okay.
It's
okay.
There.
I was, I just always loved the sort of, you know, with trios, you really have to.
You like, love that Seinfeld bass.
Push the bass.
You told me that before.
This isn't Birch. Seinfeld bass.
Yes,
you love like, Seinfeld bass.
It's like Jesus Lizard bass, dude.
Yeah.
This is post punk bass. Good tone too.
Yeah, no, it the hard thing to do with a trio is like, well, actually, it might be easier to find this is where you fit, and this is where you fit, and this is where you fit in the mix, and then everything yeah. like this doesn't sound empty. There's no space, but like
it pulls together.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely. PG Harvey said it's not just about the extremes of loud and quiet. As a writer, I want extremes in the lyrics too, with her voice compelling most almost acoustic guitar on the dry demos. She basically creates these lyrics and these statements within it that are also extreme with the sort of like extremely like shouting and then a whisper.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Does it take away your dirty pillows? That fucking line kills me, man. Lyrically, she's doing a lot more than that, but that line just like as I was driving over here, I was like, it's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
I like all the weird time changes that they have like in mm-hmm. these songs. Mm-hmm. I get what they're saying with the blues like influence.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's just like that with added on to like, you know, post punk or mm-hmm. whatever is where I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. The blues is great.
Yeah.
I'm having a great time.
When I read Captain Beefheart, I was like, it put it together for me.
Yeah.
I was like, because you listen to Safe as Milk or something like that. It's like odd time signatures mm-hmm. meets the blues. And yeah, everything kind of just clicked for me. I was like, yeah, cool. Okay. 90s post-punk Captain Beefheart.
Yep.
And then like so almost Riot Girl or sort of like a feminist movement in the early 90s too. With mm-hmm. whole... Bikini Kill, PG Harvey. I mean,
Sleater-Kinney.
Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful stuff. I was so excited about this record to be in here. And
how familiar are you with this record? Like, this is when did you get into
college? And it was a woman who was talking about, you know, being like, oh, you're into the blues, huh? Oh, you like the, you know, 90s blues stuff. And then she was like, how about PG Harvey? Like, what do you think of that? And then I listened to it and I was like, this rules. This is so good. Like, it also, I was familiar with PG Harvey from Nick Cave. So that was around the same time because they were, you know, they had done a duet. They were doing duets and things like that. And yeah, it kind of blew me away because I was just like, wow, there's another. I felt like it's that time when you see someone you're just like, wow. Such an artist, you know, like they have so many good ideas that it's almost hard to contain it.
Yep.
It's kind of how I feel about Nick Cave, Tom Waits, and, you know, a lot of those artists that produce a lot of material that always seems to hit. David Bowie, you know, like mm-hmm. it's almost like
Tom York
just can't do wrong for some reason. Mm-hmm. Like something about them is so compelling.
Agreed.
Would you, Birch, do you consider Dry a blues rock album?
No, I wouldn't say that in the traditional sense. I mean, I think it's hard to categorize. I think that's what makes it interesting. And I think the alternative rock, indie rock is probably more characteristic of it. But it was, you know, labeled as blues rock in a lot of things that I read. And I can see that influence. It has,
I definitely see the influence.
Yeah.
I also wouldn't call this a blues rock album.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause that's really pigeonhole that genre.
Yeah, unfortunately, when people think of blues, like Rob has said, they think of
Blueshammer.
12 bars and turnarounds.
12 bars and turnarounds. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They think of the, as we like to say, rib fest, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dentist blues.
And that's typically what people would say Chicago blues. B.B. King.
Yeah. Yeah.
The babysitting blues.
Yeah. Yeah. And who's in that movie?
Yes. Cameos by blues singer guitarist Albert Collins.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Albert Collins.
And singer songwriter Southside Johnny Lyon.
Yeah. Yeah. So Buddy Guy and Albert Collins, that's who people typically think of that stuff. When in fact, she's talking about Robert Johnson, Howlin' Wolf.
What if I told you I've performed at the same rib fest as Buddy Guy?
I would believe you.
Yes.
I bet he
you should.
Just as annoyed with the dentist as you were.
I'm sure he was.
Man, love Dress. Dress is such a great song. It has off-kilter time signature. The lyrics are amazing too, talking about, you know, performative for, you know, I like this guy, I'm putting on this dress, but then the dress is like, I can't walk in it, I fall down.
Yep.
You know, just
what's the metaphor? She called herself like an ice cream cone or something like that. Like yeah, it's good.
I better get out of this room, a falling woman in a dancing costume. I mean, yeah. And then we're listening to Sheila Nagig, which I didn't realize what those were until this week. The sort of like Celtic fertility carvings that depict a deranged woman spreading their engorged vulvas. So if you look those up, they're interesting looking.
This is the one that was giving me the most Slits vibes.
Ah, Slits. Okay, yeah.
This was one of these several songs that I knew going into this record.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The song's awesome. I love the song.
Gonna wash that man right out of my hair.
It's such a good hook, man.
Yeah.
Such a good, like, sometimes, man, music's good, but it just doesn't have that hook you can hang your hat on. And wash that man right out of my hair. That.
Yeah, I really.
That's good right there. That's you got something.
I love that she takes that from the South Pacific soundtrack, but then she also adds her own. I'm going to find what's the next line?
Gonna take my hips to a man who cares.
Yep. It's like pulling in those references and then adding your own. Always good when it works out, when you can pull it off.
Yes.
This was released on Too Pure, off the back of a mailed-in demo to John Peel's station.
Cool.
Based on John Peel's enthusiasm for Dress, that is how Too Pure...
No shit.
Give her the money.
Man, John Peel's so cool.
Man, this issue, like, what a legacy he's had of just giving people a leg up.
Yeah.
Like, giving people who deserve a leg up a leg up. You know, that's what a great legacy. I was going to say, I'm into this record, and I've listened to some PJ Harvey before, but I'm not that familiar with full albums. If I like this, where should I go next? Should I just go chronologically?
Rhythmy. Yeah. Yeah. Rhythm is coming right up in a couple weeks.
You're going to fucking love it.
Oh. So I don't need to seek it out. It's going to be assigned to me as homework?
Yep. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, cool.
I think we get two or three more PJ Harvey records
really?
Coming up. Yep.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, like I said, you know.
PJ Harvey missed me in the 90s.
It
wasn't until I started meeting people in college that I was even aware who she was. And even at that point, I never owned any. I never listened to any. I just heard it at parties and stuff.
Yeah, we got Rid of Me and Stories from the City, Stories from the Sea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And Stories from the City and Stories from the Sea is where I first like heard of PJ Harvey, because I think that's the one that has Tom York like coming in and doing like guest vocals.
I know that album cover, but I don't know if I know the songs on it. I might.
It was the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
I was living in a punk house.
That was the year
I left Warsaw, Indiana, and started actually hearing some other kinds of music.
It was said that the active ingredients are Harvey's own crude vulnerability and her instinct to magnify it and shine it through the lens of characters, metaphors, and obtuse expressionist rock. It's the qualities that made Dry one of Kurt Cobain's favorite records. Mm-hmm. He loved a lot of records. And it made Courtney Love respect her. It was also brawny enough to make fans out of Bon Jovi and Steven Tyler.
I find that actually more impressive than the Kurt Cobain and Courtney Love being fans. That tracks. The fact that Bon Jovi and Steven Tyler were like, oh, check this shit out. It's kind of out of their wheelhouse, and that's cool.
Yeah. I just think the way the lyrics come across are just powerful. So I'm gonna like, dude, slip myself into this body bag, like things like that. Just so good. I just love digging into it. She says a quote, "I like to humiliate myself and make the listener feel uncomfortable." Yeah, she does. She has this interesting way of like presenting like sexual lyrics, but at the same time, like, you're not sure like how they're not sexualized lyrics.
Yep.
You know, like things like, "I'll make it better, I'll rub it till it bleeds." You're kind of like, oh, what? Wait, hold on. And she does that all the time. That's too much.
I'm going to make it so dry for you.
Right. There's just things that are just very like inspiring, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's just things you wouldn't, it's the opposite of sort of like pop music where it's like happy go lucky. I'm not saying pop music can't be creative, but at the same time, it's like, this is so the opposite of a pop song that I can't even
for the time. 1992, what, New Kids on the Block?
Yeah.
Crisscross?
Yeah.
Like, you know, that.
In 1992, I was into both of those groups.
Oh, and I guess Madonna.
Yeah.
She was on a roll in 92.
But this is, that's a good point. Madonna, this is taking Madonna's Like a Prayer, but saying, oh, you want to go there. I'll take it farther.
Yeah, 100%. What was going on in Olympia, like with the
Pixies?
Like the Riot Girl scene, like Sleater-Kinney and Bikini Kill. Were they active in '92? Like, was everything just kind of like happening at the same time?
Yeah, 1990.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Bikini Kill. Yeah, because
Kim Armstrong's still just trying to get there.
Yeah.
Get back there. That is.
Yeah.
Yeah, what I'm trying to say about the lyrics too. She said that she has a strong stomach, right? For these things, she was a teenage farmhand, right? So she's like, she says I used to wring all the lambs' tails and testicles. I'd clear up dead stillborn lambs when they came out in bits. I mean, the stuff that she is saying, like, this is the things that she has discussed. She understands is making people uncomfortable, and I think that she relishes in the ability to do these things, not to be purely shocking, but to interweave her own like feelings through these things. Anyway, just my take.
Oh, I sounds like a great performer who likes to dish.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this one's you know, raw. It has that raw energy. It has the when you look at the track for the tracking for the who's on the album, it is literally just what the trio, and then they have some additional musicians for one song double bass, one song cello, and one song for guitar. Like it's them.
And the one in our cans right now is the cello song.
Yeah,
is that Joe?
Plants and Rags.
Yeah.
Plants and Rags.
Yeah,
got off count at some point.
I love PJ Harvey like unabashedly, and I hate that I end up doing the same bullshit that every other dude does. Like, oh yeah, PJ Harvey, you know, like Bikini Kill, like X other band with, like, you know, a like female front person.
Yeah.
Like it's, I'm only saying this because it's I'm going to read a little bit of what Chris Gayle had to say about this record. And he does the same shit. And I'm,
does he bring up Patti Smith?
No, he doesn't. I'll just, so since she doesn't fancy comparisons to Sinead or Kate Bush, quote, I'm like anyone as long as they're female. If they've got dark hair, it's better, unquote. Perhaps she'd prefer Cream or the Doors. Island Records sure would, but in a sexist world, she's unlikely to achieve such heights of raucous catalog stuffing. I just meant a band that sounds great until you listen to the words when you're not stoned and decide they're self-indulgent blather. This fate she's spared by the cloudy but essential feminist distinction between egotist bull roar and honest irrational outpouring. And of course, by her post-rock guitar, where she starts to reinvent her instrument the way girl punks reinvented their form. A minus. But yeah, I hate that I'm still of an age where I'm drawing comparisons to just other female artists as opposed to like anybody who was making this music at the same time. And I'm trying to rid myself of that, but it's still just pops up.
Yeah. I mean, we just talked to about an artist that I closely associate, maybe because they, you know, did a duet, but Nick Cave.
Yeah.
Is firmly, I would say, a peer of PJ Harvey at this time, even though he had been doing it for a while before this. Yeah. But they have the same sort of lyrical tell a tale, have uncomfortable lyrics, have a darkness there, but also the sort of like sexuality before it. I agree with you though many times, and I've hated things with this project because every time we have like a woman artist in the books, it's like talking about something performative, some sort of like sexual thing, and it's not just being like, yeah, here's this music, let's talk about the music. It has to be more about them than when you're talking about a male artist.
Yeah,
which is annoying. But at the same time, if people are bringing up things like comparisons to Patti Smith, I see it in the sort of vocality,
and I don't
think, in the poetry,
and I don't think PJ Harvey would be bummed out about that at all.
Yeah,
you know, that's high praise.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's so weird. It's still like,
I have the problem. I definitely do. It's a subconscious thing, I think, for me, especially because you're looking at something as being like, this is a woman artist, this is a male artist or whatever, instead of just being like, no, that's
this
just
is an artist
fucking rules.
Yep.
Especially, you know, this album, I was so excited again to have you guys listen to it, because if this was put in next to, like, we were talking about McCluskey or like Jesus Lizard, any of that, like Joy Division or stuff like that, it would, or Susie, you know, like it would be right there.
Yep,
right. Like,
absolutely.
It doesn't even matter. Yeah. You brought up the slits. I hadn't thought about that either. And then I was like, is that just because they're like women in the band, or is it a little bit different?
Literally the vocal delivery and like the doubling vocals and stuff was absolutely, I was like, oh wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Cool cover.
So cool.
Mm-hmm.
All of her covers, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's got some pretty iconic photos.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it's she's able to do the photograph thing and make it interesting. And so positive?
Are we 100%. Yeah.
Positive for me. I'm really glad I've heard this.
Yeah.
Cool.
I said that a lot this session. This is all first listens for me, and all things that I felt better on the other end having heard.
Cool. Hope that continues.
Yeah. Don't we all? I don't hope it's all first listens. I hope to be hip of some of the stuff we cover.
Yeah.
But it's always nice to be turned on to something new.
Yeah. All right. We'll be checking in very soon with PJ Harvey in 1993.
Yep.
Sounds great.
All right. Next time we'll be talking about Suede.
Holy shit, really?
Suede. All right. Thanks, y'all.